Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to As a Woman, Fertility Hormones and Beyond. I'm your host, Dr. Natalie Crawford, and I am a board-certified OBGYN and fertility physician, and also co-founder of Fora Fertility in Austin, Texas. Each week on this podcast, I discuss health and fertility and how they relate to your true self. Become a part of the community of collaboration that amplifies others as a woman. I hope you enjoy the episode. You are listening to the As a Woman podcast. Welcome back. I'm your host, Dr. Natalie Crawford. I'm a board certified OBGYN and REI. Every single day, I talk about fertility, and I'm so excited to have you here on the As a Woman podcast. Today, we are talking about male fertility and specifically dietary and lifestyle factors that can influence male fertility. This is a topic that is asked so often, and I understand because very frequently there is so much emphasis on female fertility, on ovulation, on supplements, and lifestyle factors when it comes to egg quality. Because sperm changes so quickly, the lifespan of a sperm is so short in comparison to eggs. If you think about a sperm, that life cycle is about 90 days from creation into being seen in the ejaculate. So that sperm is sensitive at different times of the development, whether it's developing its structure, its motility, its shape, how damaged the DNA may be inside the head of that sperm. This means that sperm is very sensitive, but also changes in environment can have huge impact on sperm quality. When we think about conception and we think about egg quality and how difficult it is, you're born with a set number of eggs. Those eggs are inside your ovary. They absorb the wear and the tear of your life and the world around you. And we know that those chromosomes start to lose their position as we get older, but also as we are exposed to toxins and inflammation and other factors. So egg quality is this total accumulation. Certainly, I believe that your eggs are more sensitive closer to that ovulatory time period, but we often ignore the sperm side of the equation, which is not fair at all. It's important to preface this entire discussion today by saying that a semen analysis is typically the test that we do to evaluate male fertility. A semen analysis is telling us, do you have sperm? How much sperm do you have? How does the sperm move? And is it normally shaped? Please remember that that test is not telling us at all the functionality of a sperm. Can it fertilize an egg? Is the DNA inside the head of the sperm normal or is it highly fragmented? So the standard testing that we're doing is just giving us basic information, and it's very important. Certainly, we see couples all the time who are trying to conceive and are absolutely shocked when they find out that there's no sperm. Meaning, sometimes you don't have warning signs, and I'm a big believer. We can't just presume, oh, my periods are irregular, so I'm the problem. Don't even check him. You always should check everybody. So today, I am going over a review that was published in Fertility and Sterility earlier this year, 2024, and it's called Diet and Recreational Drug Use in Relation to Male Reproductive Health. So this is what I'm being asked all the time. Before we jump in, if you have your questions, please know that some of our favorite episodes are those listener Q&A episodes here on the podcast. You can call and leave a voicemail at 657-229-3672. Again, that is 657-229-3672. And we would love to answer your question, no matter what it is. You can also ask questions on Instagram every Monday at Natalie Crawford MD. Some of these questions will be answered right there on Instagram. Some will be answered in the newsletter. So you can sign up at nataliecrawfordmd.com/newsletter. And some will be answered at the end of these podcast episodes like today. So do not hesitate to put questions if you have them. My entire goal and the whole reason why these podcasts exist is so that you can be educated about your own health, body, and fertility. So we're going to dive in right now. Sperm factors contribute to 40% of infertility, whether it's alone or in combination. So to just ignore sperm altogether is obviously not the right answer. Studies are showing us both a global decline in fertility, but also a rapid decline in sperm quality. Is this because of new or increasing exposures, a toxic lifestyle, diet, environmental factors? Those are all potential etiologies. But worldwide, we are seeing sperm counts decrease. What have we also seen over the past 50 years? We've seen the diet, especially the Western diet, the standard American diet, change dramatically. Currently, there's a higher intake of calories and meat and fat and refined foods and processed foods and added sugars than we have ever seen before. We also have higher rates of obesity and other medical issues. So looking at how we can potentially impact sperm is really important because sperm are susceptible to modification, and those tiny immature sperm, the spermatozoa, are their most vulnerable when it comes to oxidative stress and DNA damage. So making changes really might influence how sperm are developing and the DNA quality inside that sperm. So dietary interventions are promising avenues, especially when it comes to sperm quality and lifestyle. The problem is that it is very hard to study diet. You've heard me say this before. Anybody who's listened to the podcast knows that I majored in nutrition, I have a master's in clinical research, and I understand how tough it is to look at studies and to run studies when it comes to nutrition, because it's very difficult to control all the other confounding factors. People who eat more broccoli are also likely to be people who eat less sugar. So good behaviors tend to go with good behaviors. But if we put that aside, this paper is a review, meaning it takes different types of studies with different methodologies and puts them together. That way, it can look at multiple factors at once and hopefully reduce a little bit of the confounding, meaning finding a cause just because of another cause. So people who drink coffee are smarter is a good example of that. Does the coffee really cause you to be smarter, or is it that people who drink coffee tend to be in graduate school or have high-stress jobs or accelerate in other avenues? I'm just using an example of where an association can be interpreted as a causation when it really is not. Coffee does not influence how smart you are. And now a thank you to one of our sponsors, Rocket Money. If you have been following, you know that I'm a fertility doctor, and at Fora, we just opened our own IVF lab. So I've been trying to save money because that's expensive. But it seemed like my bank account was absolutely stuck. So thankfully, I heard about Rocket Money and gave it a try. And it turns out I had a bunch of subscriptions that I was paying for that I have been too busy and I have forgotten about. Rocket Money helped me cancel some of them, and that is just making me feel so much better watching my account balance go up. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of 500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when they use the app's features. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/AAW. That's rocketmoney.com/AAW. rocketmoney.com/AAW. And now a word from one of our sponsors, Apostrophe. With the temperature starting to warm up, I'm so excited that summer is around the corner and getting ready and looking forward to the summer months. But I know that when I'm outside enjoying nature, I need to pick up supplies to prepare myself for summer adventures. And if you want to get your skin glowing in time for summer, it's time for you to get started with Apostrophe, who is sponsoring this episode. Apostrophe's goal is to help you feel confident in your own skin. So whether you're dealing with breakouts, signs of aging, or acne scarring, Apostrophe will help you love the skin you're in. I personally love that you get access to an expert dermatology team, a tailored treatment plan. It's simple to sign up for your first visit, and there is no in-person appointment or trip to the pharmacy needed. We have a special deal for our audience. Get your first visit for only $5 at apostrophe.com/AAW when you use our code AAW. That's a savings of $15. This code is only available to our listeners. To get started, just go to apostrophe.com/AAW and click Get Started. Then use the code AAW at sign up and you'll get your first visit for only $5. Thank you, Apostrophe, for sponsoring this episode. And then we have the difference in sperm parameters, but clinical findings. So does a difference in a sperm count of 50 million per ml and 300 million per ml? That probably is statistically significant, but does that clinically mean anything? Does that change your chance of getting pregnant or improve your IVF outcomes? Or when might something improve your IVF outcome, but doesn't look like it changes sperm parameters? That could be a reflection of improving the quality or the DNA inside, because in IVF, we're controlling so many other variables. When we're going to go through this, to make this the easiest way possible, I'm going to go through some of the categories the study looked at and the summary of what was found when they looked at different studies based on one, sperm quality and counts, two, clinical fertility endpoints. And then I'll give you my take home and how I counsel patients at the end, my big dietary summary, and we'll answer some commonly asked questions. So if you look at dietary patterns first, so some studies look at the Mediterranean diet or a carnivore diet or a vegan diet and look at an actual quote unquote diet. Essentially, dietary studies are showing that adherence to an overall healthier diet is associated with higher sperm count, concentration, and motility. Well, what does that mean, a healthier diet? What describes a healthier diet? Well, a poor diet is typically considered a standard American or Western style diet. A good quality diet is one that has a higher intake of fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, seafood, poultry, and lower intake of red meat, processed meat, sweets, sweetened beverages, and the Mediterranean diet tends to fit into here and is one that is commonly named or studied. But this is one of those categories where looking at sperm to sperm, you see an improvement that's statistically significant, but clinical outcomes when it comes to IVF have not been seen with just a generalized diet pattern. I like to break it down into food groups more. Not that I like to be restrictive, but I feel like it just gives more color and enlightenment when you're trying to make food choices versus this one diet name. So animal protein is a huge thing that we always talk about. So most studies are finding that processed meats are detrimental. They're a type 1 carcinogen that should not be surprising to us. Seafood, including fish and shellfish, have been shown to be helpful to sperm parameters. So processed meat bad, seafood good. These findings are pretty consistent on sperm parameters, but when it comes to clinical outcomes, the studies are just a little bit different. So if we look at three studies, one looking at men undergoing ICSI, so putting a sperm inside an egg, higher red meat was associated with a lower probability of implantation in pregnancy. So men who ate more red meat had a lower association of their partners having their eggs fertilized, even when you put the sperm inside or having them get pregnant. A second study looked at IVF again and showed that poultry intake was associated with fertilization, so positively. So eating more poultry had a positive impact on fertilization, but processed meat was negatively associated. But in that study, none of those things impacted live birth. Although if you've been through IVF, there's loss along the way. So more eggs fertilized, more embryos growing out does feel like a win, even if the live birth outcome wasn't different. And in a study looking at time to pregnancy, so a natural fertility study, male seafood intake, so the more seafood you ate was associated with an improved fertility rate, meaning a shorter time to pregnancy. So ultimately, to me, this is supporting that processed meats and red meats might be detrimental, and meats like chicken, seafood might be better choices when you're trying to choose between your meat choices. Breaking down protein and looking at some plant-based options, what we can find is that studies with nuts are an excellent source of unsaturated fatty acids like omega-3s. Two randomized controlled trials, even though they were small, did both show that consuming higher quantity of nuts was associated with improved sperm parameters. One specifically looked at walnuts and an increase in walnuts after 12 weeks, which is the general lifespan of sperm, was associated with an improvement in sperm motility and shape compared to normal Western diet. And in the second study, it was an increase of nuts, not a specific type. But after 14 weeks, there was an improvement in count motility, morphology, and that study looked at fragmentation of DNA in the sperm, and it was lower. And this was all compared to the standard American or Western diet. So nut intake appears to be beneficial across the board for sperm parameters. Looking, though, however, at IVF specifically, there was a positive association between walnut intake and total sperm count again, but did not see that there was a higher probability of implantation or clinical pregnancy or live birth rate. Notably, we're drawing that conclusion on one study. If we look at soy, the questions I get about soy and sperm. So soy is a phytoestrogen, and I think that word estrogen being inside of it makes it very scary when it comes to sperm because it's received a lot of attention as a potential reproductive toxin in men because it's very weakly estrogenic. But this concern is unfounded based on studies. Even a meta-analysis, which looked at 41 studies looking at soy intake, they looked at male hormones, revealed that higher intake of soy was not associated with any change in testosterone levels or estrogen levels in men. And looking at sperm specifically, studies have shown both a decrease, a no change, and an improvement in sperm parameters, likely meaning there's no real impact on sperm. And then further looking at IVF or time to pregnancy studies, there was no association of increased consumption of soy and having a longer time to pregnancy or increased consumption of soy having any impact on fertilization, embryo quality, implantation, clinical pregnancy, or live birth rate. The take-home message here is that nuts appear beneficial, soy appears neutral. Our next category is going to be dairy, which is another one where studies are showing us different things. And this is likely due to the associations drawn and how they're studying what they're looking at. One study showed positive association between skim milk intake and better sperm quality, including concentration and motility, and full-fat dairy intake, specifically cheese, being detrimental and lowering sperm concentration and shape of sperm and moving sperm. But there's been no association in the clinical studies, so no change when it comes to live birth rate or clinical pregnancy rate. So to me, dairy is one that I pretty much say neutral on for my patients since there hasn't been any clinical findings of significance. And just in general, feel like if you can tolerate dairy, have it when you want it, everything in moderation, not cheese at every meal, probably. I'm sure you're not going to be surprised to hear that fruit and vegetable intake has been associated with improved sperm findings in many studies. Having higher quartile consumption of fruits and vegetables has been positively associated with improved concentration and motility of sperm. There's been some attack on fruits and vegetables. Everybody's going to attack something. But part of this comes to pesticide, and you know, organic and pesticide, these things are trigger words. Obviously, that can make food be more expensive. But when they looked at some US studies and divided up fruit and vegetable intake into low pesticide residue and high pesticide residue, those that were low pesticide residue had a higher intake of that type of fruit and vegetable, had a improvement in sperm count and concentration. But high pesticide residue had no association with sperm quality in one study. And in a second study, if you did consume that high pesticide residue fruit and veggies, was actually negatively associated with sperm quality. So if you think about, do you know what high pesticide produce is? I don't always know that. So the high pesticide produce, red, yellow, and green peppers, spinach, strawberries, celery, blueberries, potatoes, apples, pears, peaches, plums, winter squash, kale, grapes, and raisins. Do I tell people to not eat those types of foods? Absolutely not. But what I would say is that the list of the high pesticide produce would be one that I would want to make sure we are diligent about cleaning in our house, rinsing and washing before consumption, and to take fruits and veggies into clinical studies, not just looking at sperm counts and movement, but actually ability to get pregnant. Regardless of the pesticide residue, consuming more fruits and vegetables was associated with an increase in fertilization rate with conventional fertilization or ICSI in IVF studies. Whole grains and carbohydrates in general are so interesting because in the diet world, There's such a negative connotation with grains. But we have to remember that whole grains are components of healthy diets. They have a lot of fiber in them. They can be an antioxidant. Increased consumption of whole grains has been associated with better sperm quality. There have been no studies looking specifically at grain intake and IVF or time to pregnancy studies, so the clinical correlations don't exist. But most of those healthy diets include some whole grains, and they're well-rounded. An incorporation of those healthy whole grains can be really beneficial when it comes to your sperm parameters. And now a word from one of our sponsors, Ritual. Did you know that women were excluded from clinical research policy by federal law until 1993? But women belong in scientific research. They're essential, and Ritual knows this. I choose Ritual Multivitamin every day because it is easy to take, and I know that I am getting high quality and traceable ingredients in a clean and bioavailable forms. In fact, Ritual conducted a university-led human clinical trial for their Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin to assess its efficacy, and the results showed increase in vitamin D levels by 43% and omega-3 DHA levels by 41% in just 12 weeks. No more shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin that you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/AAW. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/AAW for 25% off. Thank you, Ritual. And now a word from one of our sponsors, Quince. The weather's getting warmer, so it's time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and hello to shorts and tees. I wanted to update my wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune. And luckily, I found Quince. Now I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. The best part is that Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands, but Quince partners directly with top factories, cutting out the cost of the middleman, passing the saving to us, and only working with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices. I personally cannot wait to wear my cute tan linen set this summer. So it's your turn to get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/AAW for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/AAW to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/AAW. Thank you, Quince. This category makes me laugh. Sugar-sweetened beverages. We're really talking about soda and juices, things like that, but sugar-sweetened beverages. So men who consumed more sugar-sweetened beverage had lower sperm motility. Further, they also had lower concentration counts, and hormonally, they had different ratios of their hormones, leading to overall lower testosterone levels. When you looked at a large study, high sugar drinks and snacks, it was a combined category, was also associated with lower sperm concentration and less sperm of a normal shape or normal morphology. And there's numerous studies looking at the sperm parameters. But looking at time to pregnancy studies, which are harder to conduct, showed the strongest evidence on this topic, showing that higher consumption of sugar-sweetened beverage, in particular soda and energy drinks, was associated with a longer time to pregnancy and reduce fecundability. So this isn't just a sperm one, but we can really feel more confident based on the data out here that this is translating clinically into sperm function as well. Alcohol. I know everybody loves to act like alcohol is beneficial and a glass of red wine is good for you, but there are a wealth of studies indicating that chronic alcohol consumption is bad for sperm quality, specifically DNA damage. Most studies looking at low or moderate alcohol have found little or less impact, but often what studies declare as little or moderate is much different than what humans do. So there was a study done looking at IVF and looking at live birth after IVF, and it decreased when the male partner consumed 6 drinks per week or more. So that's not even a drink every day. We've also seen poor fertilization rates, poor blastocyst formation rates with the higher alcohol intake levels, meaning the more you're drinking, the lower the chance you're going to make embryos. When you put all this together, very little benefit from consuming alcohol. And if you're drinking a drink a day, there's likely going to be some detriment. Most of these studies are using 6 drinks per week as a threshold. So I tell my patients, if you want to consume alcohol, that should be an occasional thing, definitely not a daily thing, and should not be binge drinking either. Caffeine is a difficult category because the things that go into the category are so diverse. Coffee, tea, sugar-sweetened beverage like cola. So there's a lot of conflicting evidence, probably because they're looking at caffeine levels and intake versus actually the source of the caffeine. Other studies that are looking at the different sources of caffeine, interpreting findings by type, male energy drink intake was associated with decreased fecundability, so longer time to pregnancy, but coffee and tea intake was not. So the source of your caffeine probably matters more than the caffeine itself. Previous studies on marijuana, if we get into that specifically, have been very mixed, likely due to reporting bias of illegal use because people aren't always willing to admit they're using it or be honest with amounts. When we're looking at the most recent data, one really compelling study was in a North American time to pregnancy cohort, and it showed no change in chance of pregnancy per month, but a very significant chance of miscarriage if the male partner consumed marijuana one time per week or more versus people who did not. Most studies are seeing a decrease in count and motility with marijuana consumption, especially the increased usage. The more you are using it, you can actually downregulate your brain's desire to make testosterone. And testosterone and sperm are made together, so downregulating this axis can definitely have consequences. That being said, the good news is because the sperm axis is so changeable, changing habits and abstaining from marijuana, this does look like a reversible change in the vast majority of people. I will say the more you use, the longer you've used it, that potentially could be a different situation. However, this is something I'm always talking to patients about. And especially if we are seeing a poor association, a lack of growth of embryos in culture, something pertaining to egg or sperm quality, this is one thing that I have seen couples change and see a very different outcome. And then the last category here is going to be looking at e-cigarettes or vaping. Now, these have become more popular, so we don't have long-term data, but given that there's a high level of nicotine in them and high level of other toxins, there have been concerns raised about their impact on sperm health or male hormones. There's only been one study on this topic, and looking at young Danish men, daily vaping was associated with lower sperm concentration and total counts being lower than non-users. Looking at quality or DNA integrity in animal models also suggested that vaping and e-cigarettes is associated with decrease in normally shaped sperm. And this is very similar to what we're seeing in cigarettes as well. So smoking has been well associated to have a negative impact on sperm. All right, so this all leads to coming together on what is the best diet, the best behaviors when it comes to sperm. And I say this all the time, it's not surprising. It's exactly what you would think is a healthy diet. We know what healthy eating parameters are. So eating a diet that's full of fruits and vegetables, make sure you wash them so you get rid of pesticides. Having whole grains, nuts, dairy in moderation, seafood, limit your red meat, your processed meats, limit your sweets and your sugar-sweetened beverages, limit your refined foods, those processed foods. That's going to be associated with better sperm quality. And studies that are looking at going from a poor diet, a standard American diet, that Western diet, to a Mediterranean diet, as an example, has shown that even with just 4 to 6 months of adherence, you can see improvement in sperm parameters. We also can feel comfortable as plant-based diets are gaining in popularity. You know that I am plant-based, that those plant-based sources of proteins like nuts, soy, legumes are not concerning when it comes to male fertility. And as we would think, alcohol intake, extra sugar intake, smoking cigarettes, vaping, those are likely behaviors that are detrimental if we are trying to get pregnant. Do people get pregnant eating a crazy diet or whatever they want and smoking pot every day? Yeah, of course they do. But if you are trying to optimize your chance of getting pregnant or you're having difficulty, if you're having infertility, if you're going through IVF and spending $20,000, let's try to make the changes that we can. Let's control the factors we can control so that we are putting ourselves in the best place to have the best outcome possible. When I have somebody who gets a semen analysis and it has really low parameters, do I say, oh, let's change your diet and recheck it in 3 months? Sometimes, but often that's not the only thing I feel comfortable doing. This is going to depend on how long you've been trying, what the rest of the workup shows, how old everybody is, how many kids you want. But making these changes can have a relatively fast impact on your potential outcome when it comes to getting pregnant or having success with fertility treatment. So ultimately, make healthy choices. The choices you make the majority of the days gives your body the flexibility and the ability to accommodate the cake on your birthday or that drink on the celebration, if those are things you want to do. But if you're constantly consuming highly inflammatory foods, foods with a high toxin level, things that are hard for your body to process, you're putting your body in a state where it's not going to be able to handle those extra things. And that's going to be reflected in your reproductive health. Your hormones are directly correlated with your overall sense of health. So please, let's pay attention to the world around us and make the best choices that we can. I'm going to jump to For Fertility's Sake, FFS. This is our weekly segment where I answer your fertility questions. As a reminder, you can ask your questions on Instagram on Mondays at Natalie Crawford MD, and we will answer them here at the end of some of these episodes. You also can ask your questions on the voicemail. And again, that number is 657-229-3672, 657-229-3672. Our first question is fresh versus frozen sperm. Is fresh the best practice? Because as we talked about in this episode, sperm are so sensitive. Yes, using fresh sperm is the best. Many sperm do not survive the freeze-thaw process. And specifically, if you have lower sperm counts, getting a fresh sample can be great. That being said, sperm is frozen all the time. And if we have normal parameters and we're not worried about having enough sperm, freezing a sample can give a lot of flexibility, especially if we're not convinced that somebody can be there or be available. It's specifically when we are concerned about having enough sperm or the functionality of that sperm that having fresh sperm really does matter the most. How do I improve my chances of conceiving with IUI? We have to think about why we're using IUI and have reasonable expectations. So IUI is intrauterine insemination. This is where the sperm is taken and put inside the uterus. Now, notably, it's washed because the entire ejaculate would cause a very big inflammatory reaction if that was inside the uterus. The ejaculate, that seminal fluid, is made to protect the sperm from the acidity of the vagina. So we are washing the sperm and taking a highly concentrated sample and then placing it closer to where it needs to be. In everybody, when we're doing IUI, we're not ever going to exceed our natural rate of getting pregnant based on our age. So if we look at fecundability, your chance of getting pregnant per month, IUI does not improve it. IUI is trying to help somebody who has less than that monthly chance get to their age-related norm. So if you are 35 and trying to get pregnant, your monthly chance of pregnancy is about 11 to 12% right out the gate. Now, if you've been trying to get pregnant for a year and you now have unexplained infertility, your chance of pregnancy is less. So now it's 4 to 5%. If you're doing an IUI with unexplained infertility, if we combine it with purposefully using medication to make you ovulate more than one egg, like Clomid or Letrozole or gonadotropins, I can now get your pregnancy rate to 8 to 10% per month. I'm still not at what you started as before you had infertility. If you're 35 and you're single by choice, or you're in a same-sex relationship, or your partner travels, or you just want to improve your odds of conceiving, I'm not getting higher than that 11 to 12% chance by doing IUI. That being said, there are some times where it can be helpful. I have patients who have a really difficult time with intercourse, whether it's ejaculation or it's pain. Cycle tracking is too difficult. Partners are traveling, having that frozen sperm available can help us time. So there's definitely reasons why IUI can be beneficial, but it isn't something that is going to have this very, very high chance of pregnancy. Meaning, How are you going to improve your odds? Essentially the same way you're trying to improve your odds for natural conception. You're going to have a healthy life. You're going to follow the recommendations when it comes to what do you eat, what do you do, exercise, sleep, making those healthy choices on an everyday basis. You're going to make sure you have your other fertility factors all tested. Your tubes are open. You've talked about how old you are, your AMH, how many kids you want, and that you have a goal of how many IUIs you're doing. One important factor to note is that IUI alone in the context of unexplained infertility does not improve pregnancy rates. So if you ovulate, your tubes are open, there's normal sperm. Now you have unexplained infertility and you want to do an IUI, a natural cycle IUI. That does not improve your chances of conceiving. The improvement in unexplained fertility specifically is going to be when we combine it with ovulation induction, making you ovulate. And really, this is super ovulation, making you ovulate 2 or 3 eggs. Increase number of eggs, get the sperm closer to where it needs to be, and see if that can improve the odds of conception. That's different than if you have no sperm, absolute male factor. You're using donor sperm. You might not need ovulation induction. It depends on the full picture of your ovulatory status. So that's a case where a natural cycle IUI might work. Everybody's situation is unique, so make sure you have a care team that's really talking you through specifics for you. I'm starting IVF this week, and I'm hearing conflicting things about exercise. What do you recommend? Most of these exercise restrictions, they come from a fear of ovarian torsion. Ovarian torsion is when your ovary twists amongst its blood vessels, constricts them. Imagine twisting a garden hose. And then what happens is the ovary doesn't get blood. It can become necrotic. It can die. This can be a surgical emergency. Ovarian torsion is of a higher risk when the ovaries are bigger, and specifically when you have fluid-filled cysts, like all of those follicles with IVF, because it makes the ovary more buoyant. It bounces more, it moves around more. So it's more likely to twist on itself if you're doing anything that raises the ovaries out of your pelvis. For the vast majority of people, the first few days of your stem, your ovaries are still going to be very small. So I tend to think that most exercise restrictions can start around day 4 or 5. However, if you have a really high egg count, your risk is a little bit different and you might be on restrictions sooner. The way I like to describe this to patients is if you imagine you have 2 water balloons sitting inside your pelvis. Anything that's making those water balloons move around as you move, so imagine running, the water balloons are moving, or jumping jacks. Those are specifically things that are off limits. Inversions like downward dog, off limits. Now, can you stand there and do bicep curls? Yes. Can you walk? Yes. Can you do squats, especially if they're controlled? Yes. So thinking about what you can and can't do, I almost never put somebody on complete exercise restriction, but I do want to talk about what I'm okay with and empower them to know what they should not be doing. Importantly, your ovaries are still big after the retrieval. There's this idea that you're going to go in there and drain all the eggs and everything's going back to normal, but many follicles actually fill with blood instead of follicular fluid and they can still be pretty large. So wait until that period comes before you get back to your exercise. And of course, these are generic recommendations. You should ask your doctor. Everybody's situation is unique and individualized. All right, well, I hope this episode was helpful for all of you. As always, please keep asking your questions. That drives the content, and that's the whole reason why the podcast exists. Follow along on Instagram at Natalie Crawford MD. Don't forget, if you really want to learn more about your fertility, you can sign up for the Enhance Your Natural Fertility course, which is on the website at nataliecrawfordmd.com. You can also follow along on YouTube if you are a more video style person. Thanks, friends. Thank you all for listening to As a Woman. It would mean so much if you could rate, review, and follow the podcast to be notified of new episodes every Sunday. I hope you learned something new, and I hope you share it with someone in your life. Be sure to follow along on Instagram at Natalie Crawford MD and check out the YouTube channel Natalie Crawford MD. If you're interested in becoming a patient, you can also follow Fora Fertility. I'm so thrilled to have you here, part of the community that amplifies others as a woman.
Hey guys, welcome to The Collective. I'm Brianne Halfrich, a 26-year-old bioethics PhD student and clothing brand CEO. Welcome to my podcast where we talk all things health and wellness, navigating your 20s, and becoming the best version of yourself. So sit down, play that episode, and join the collective.